Welcome to Making the Grade, the podcast that explores what's driving the decline in graduation rates between funding rounds and what it really takes to scale a venture-backed software startup successfully with realistic options to exit. I'm Tom Glasson, CEO at ScaleWise, and each week I'm going to be joined by founders, investors, and some of the best go-to-market leaders in the world to unpack the strategies, the missteps, and the mindset shifts that separate those who graduate from those who don't. Expect real talk, actionable go-to-market insights, and honest stories that will help you scale more wisely and thrive in an increasingly competitive market. Because there is a smarter way to scale, and we're here to uncover it. If you're a founder CEO, how do you know when it's time to step aside? It's a question more and more founders are facing. I've seen some make the leap early, but others outstay their runway. And in this episode, I speak with someone who's navigated that transition with intention and absolute clarity. Robert Noury, now chief explorer at Arctic Shores, stepped out of the CEO seat to take on a role unlike any I've heard before. And after this conversation, I doubt it'll be the last time I actually hear the role chief explorer. And Arctic Shores is helping talent acquisition leaders rethink how they recruit, using behavioral science and technology to uncover potential far beyond what's written on a CV. And together, Robert and I dive into the human side of entrepreneurship, from resilience and self-awareness to the cultural stigma around failure and how AI is reshaping how we hire. Whether you're leading your business through a change or starting to think about what comes next in your founder journey, this one's for you. So let's get into it. Robert, welcome to Making the Grade. How are you today?
Really well. Thank you so much for inviting me, Tom.
Absolute pleasure. So Robert, you've had a pretty unique path through the entrepreneurial world, I think. And one thing that really stands out about you is, I suppose, how purpose-driven your journey has been, not just kind of building a company for growth's sake, but one that's rooted in values. And I suppose before we get into the Arctic Shores story in particular, it would be great just to zoom out and understand your broader journey. Maybe you can just give us a whistle-stop tour of your career to date and take us on the journey that brought you to where you are today.
Sure. No, and I think sometimes the journey to an entrepreneur is very individual, but actually an important part of how you end up where you are. And so Arctic Shores is my third startup. The first one I did was back in the 90s, where my idea was to create, those are the days of the Yellow Pages, which kind of feels like I'm sort of talking about a fax machine to you know, anybody that's under the age of 30 now. But we had Yellow Pages in those days, and I had an idea of, could you create a version of Yellow Pages specifically for people who were retired? And to put vouchers in there to encourage them to certain shops. And I spent a whole summer wandering around Bournemouth, of all places, knocking on doors of shops, trying to persuade them to advertise in what was called pensioners' pages. It didn't work out, but it was a very interesting lesson about starting up a business, how you research it, how you prepare for it. I learned a lot of good skills about cold call selling and resilience of after you've been, you know, turned down 10 times by hairdressers, by, you know, cake shops and all the rest of it, of how you lift yourself up to be energized for the next one. So it was a really good training ground for me. I come from a family of entrepreneurs. My father set up his own manufacturing business. My brother set up his own advertising and media business too. So it was always in the genes that we wanted to do. I wanted to do this. Went out to Hong Kong, spent 7 years in one of the greatest cities for entrepreneurship that's out there in the world. Really got the hunger and the bug for wanting to go and set up my own business at that point. I mean, the great thing I loved about Hong Kong was, and it was very noticeable about the attitude to entrepreneurship there versus here, is that there was no sense of, if you messed up or you failed, that was all part of the learning. There was not failure in a business was not a bad thing. Whereas in the English psyche, and you probably know this as well, Tom, we somehow, you know, if you've set something up and it hasn't worked, oh well maybe you weren't very good at it, as opposed to, that is your training ground. And so I really kind of, when I saw that failure was a good thing in as far as in entrepreneurship and Hong Kong was concerned, and what was important was not whether you were prepared to fail or not, was whether you were prepared to learn from it, pick yourself up and keep going despite the failure that you'll come across in any entrepreneurship journey in different guises and different forms. And so then I came back to the UK and set up my first business, ran that 10 years, ended up with 40 people selling around the world. It was document management and sold it to Xerox. And then after that, it was, right, what do I want to do next? And the brilliant thing for that drives entrepreneurs is that you think you can tackle anything. And of course, you can't, but it's the desire to start on the journey that's important. And I thought, oh, recruitment, that sounds an interesting area. A friend of mine had said that his daughter had been rejected for 5 graduate jobs because of the psychometric test that she had to go through, and she'd underperformed in it despite being immensely capable. And as a father of a daughter, too, who was about to go into higher education and then the job market, I was slightly horrified about the way that we determined if somebody was fit for a role or not. And I thought, oh, I can improve that. I know how to disrupt worlds. And again, it's one of those things, if I knew what I was about to go on embark, I probably would have thought much harder about it. And 10 years on, you know, Arctic Shores is now worked with 350 companies, 3 million candidates have been screened, and a lot of the things that I only dreamed about have come to fruition.
Wow, what a wonderful journey, Robert. And I love the fact that it was Hong Kong that taught you that failure was okay. I grew up in Southeast Asia, so I completely get what you're saying there about the difference culturally around failure. I'm a big believer that, you know, we kind of fail our way to success, and actually those failures are a really important part of the journey. So that's great. And obviously at ScaleWise, we know Arctic Shores pretty well, and we were delighted to secure you a fractional CRO a couple of years ago now. And it's clear that the business has become a standout in the skills assessment space. And what's always struck me is the ambition behind the mission. You're essentially using kind of behavioral science to rethink how we assess human potential so that we can avoid some of the examples that you just gave there around, you know, very capable people missing out on good jobs through, you know, the old way of assessing. That kind of impact driven mission is often what I think sustains founders through the highs and the lows, which invariably there is, as we've talked about. Can you maybe tell us a bit more about Arctic Shores and just the journey that you've been on over the last 11 years since you founded the company? And in particular, maybe what some of the biggest highlights have been for you throughout that journey?
Yeah. So you're right. That purpose is so important in terms of just, why do you get out of bed in the morning? Because there's going to be so many reasons to not do what you do. And our approach to psychometrics is fundamentally different from what everybody else does on all this. And that's part of the excitement, but it's also a huge part of the challenge. So the thing, say, my friend and co-founder, we just believed two things. One is we wanted to find a better way to understand people. So my big thing is, how do you uncover potential? So there's been lots of ways that we've tried to discover potential, which is asking people questions, outreach, all those kind of things. Good things. But the challenge that we wanted to look at was, how do you uncover, which really means, how do you find something out about people perhaps they didn't even know that they were good at, or perhaps their context, their family situation meant that they didn't realize how good they are or something. And resilience is one of the things that you and I, you know, from a sales point of view, is one of those things that we always look for and talk about. But how would you, by asking somebody a question in an interview, determine how resilient they are? Do you say, oh, you know, do you run marathons or do you climb mountains? Or somebody might go, well, yeah, I do climb mountains, but is my mountain a hill and yours is Everest? Who's determining what the reference point is here about resilience. And the only way we're really going to know is to get you to do something. And I come across a lot of people who have, despite their circumstances, single parent families having to deal with really challenging upbringing environments and therefore hugely resilient, but in their own mind, not in any way aware that that is a skill and a capability that they develop, because their reference point is, I just live in a challenging world. I've had to cope with a lot of different things, and I've learned to cope with it, and I've learned that I am able to cope with those things. But that is more sort of internal focused in terms of how I, the world that I live in, as opposed to realizing that I've got something that is stronger than other people have. So that was my whole focus, was, okay, how do you uncover these things? And that led me then down the rabbit hole of, well, clearly you have to get somebody to do something to really know what they're capable of, rather than asking them a question. And so I thought, well, can we design a psychometric assessment that gets people to do something and learn about them from the way that they do something? It just hadn't been done before. All psychometrics, since they started with Myers-Briggs in the 1950s, had been about asking you a question and you giving then an answer, more like me, less like me, as a response to it. But nobody had really attempted, there'd been lots of research in neuroscience around this, but nobody had actually brought it to the commercial world. So that's what we set about. We got a neuroscientist, we got a psychologist, we got a data scientist, and we actually got a game designer to help us come up with tasks that were, you know, engaging and interacting. We bought lots of pizza. We shoved them all in a room. They all had different opinions as to what needed to be done and how to do it. And that in itself was, you know, an interesting dynamic, as how you get all these people with very different views and perspectives on things to actually come together and make something that hadn't been made before. And you have no idea whether it's going to work.
It's obviously been a long journey, lots of ups and downs, I'm sure. Has there been one moment that stands out to you as a real turning point, where you felt Arctic Shores had maybe kind of crossed an important threshold in your mind?
Well, it's been a roller coaster, as you know, Tom, and I always say that to anybody thinking about the entrepreneurial journey on this. You will stare bankruptcy, collapse in the face many times, and you will wonder whether this big dream that you had can ever actually materialize. And COVID was definitely the darkest and hardest period that I've been through in my business career. I've been through the financial crisis of 2008-09, and my business, previous business, has survived that. That was challenging. But COVID, when nobody was recruiting anymore, nobody wanted any recruitment software because they weren't really recruiting, all moved online, and a lot of people were worried about whether the jobs were going to last. And we really, you know, wondered what the future of Arctic Shores was going to be in that time, when we had to do some really tough things. But you emerge out of it. That's, you know, if you have that sense of purpose and you have those stories that I just shared with you, that you want to find a way, and if, with a bit of luck and a bit of careful planning, you find your way out of the trough and you're back up again. The turning point, believe it or not, Tom, has actually happened in the last 6 months, even though we've been going 10 years. And it's happened in the last 6 months because of artificial intelligence, in a way that I never imagined that something would come. Because artificial intelligence is nothing new. We had artificial intelligence back in 2017, 18. Everybody was renaming it. Even Arctic Shores considered, thankfully we didn't, but we considered, should we change our name to arcticshores.ai rather than .com? And then it all kind of got exciting, and then it blew over as people realized, hang on, there's some issues around AI and we need to figure some of these things out. But then general artificial intelligence appeared with OpenAI. And I remember at the time talking to Saif about it, saying, and he was very excited about it. And I was thinking, I think this is going to turn recruitment upside down, because I could see very, very quickly, and I went on record around this very, very quickly, that this was going to be like a, you know, Sam Altman uses the term a word calculator. And I used it a couple of times, ChatGPT, in very early days. And I thought, this is going to make it so easy for candidates now. They're going to be able to write CVs, cover letters. I even then did a project with UCL to see, could you use ChatGPT to answer standard psychometric tests? And you could. And suddenly now you had the whole of the recruitment process being turned upside down because the candidates had the same technology at their fingertips as recruiters have had through their computers. And so the power dynamic has fundamentally shifted. And that has given an opportunity for Arctic Shores to say, okay, if the whole of recruitment is now being thrown upside down because we have the AI-enabled candidate, then you need to rethink the how you select and what you select in a totally different way. And Arctic Shores, by chance, it's not, you know, I even knew, I just went on this journey, as I said to you, but chance has got something that is AI resilient. You can't use ChatGPT to complete a task-based assessment because we just don't have any language. It's all about interacting with tasks. And so we suddenly find ourselves in this, you know, lucky position of having a product at a time of huge disruption that is able to deal with that disruption.
That's, wow, what a fortunate, I suppose, circumstance or coincidence. But I know that the last 5 or 6 months has also been a period of transition for you personally. This year, I know you took what many founders would consider an incredibly bold step, stepping down from the CEO role. That's not a move that, you know, we always see. It's certainly not one that's easy to make, but I believe it speaks volumes about self-awareness and maturity as a leader. Can you maybe share more about what led you to that decision and how you landed on your new role title, which is Chief Explorer?
Sure. Well, I first of all, just coming back to Chief Explorer, and then I'll tell you about the transition, because I've been surprised, pleasantly surprised, how many people say, Robert, that's such a cool title. I wish I was Chief Explorer. I credit my wife, Laura, entirely for coming up with the idea, because as I was going through the thinking about what do I want to do, what's the best value that I can provide to Arctic Shores, plus, you know, where how is the company need to evolve, I was immediately confronted with, well, if I'm going to have a different role, and we've got a very good chair, so I'm not going to be chair for all of this, so I want to be actively involved in the business, what's my title going to be? Because if I can't explain what my title is going to be, how on earth am I going to come up with a transition plan and persuade investors that this is the right thing to be doing? Because it wasn't investors, which usually, I mean, I think in 99 times out of 100, a founder transition like this is down to either investors are unhappy with the founder as the CEO, or the founder has got some health crisis and they're so neither of those things applied to me. As you can see, I'm perfectly healthy and very energized about the world and what Arctic Shores is up to. So none of those things applied to me. It was something that I wanted to go back to what I did at the beginning, my passion, which is talking to people, persuading people that there's a different and a better way to uncover potential. But I had to come up with this name. And I was talking to my wife, what do I become? You know, I'm chief executive officer, so I still got to be chief of something. What can I be chief of? And we, the collective, many startups and companies have a collective term. So in Arctic Shores, we came up with this idea of we're Arctic explorers. You know, we're pioneers, we're and exploring things. So we refer, if you're a member of the Arctic Shores team, you're an explorer. And so my wife said, well, why don't you just become chief explorer? Because, you know, you're still co-founder. It shows you are the chief explorer. You are the first one around this. And I said, well, you know, is that a bit wishy-washy? Well, you know, what are investors going to say? Who's ever written a job description for a chief explorer? But actually, as the more I thought about it, I thought that's a brilliant, absolutely brilliant idea. And the chief explorer, basically get to run around, talk to customers, support the sales team, talk at conferences, provide thought leadership, do all the things. Tom, you founded a business on, you know, this is what drives you. We were talking about we're purpose driven. That purpose comes from getting out there in the marketplace and talking about it. It doesn't come from running the business, doing performance reviews, all these things that have to happen. But that's not why I started the business, to make sure that the wheels of the organization turn over. It is to get out there and spread the message about how do you uncover potential. And I was finding that I was doing less and less of that after 10 years. I was finding that I wasn't Tigger-like jumping out of bed every morning going, can't wait to, get into the day as I saw a diary full of internal meetings. And I wasn't spending time getting out with customers, which is what energized me. It was as much driving my energy and enthusiasm for things that I then went to the investors and said, I want to start change into a different role. They were very confused by this because they, as I said to you, the two instances that they'd ever come across, either unhappy with somebody or health, didn't apply to me. So they were completely confused as to why I should be doing this. Can't you do both? Can't you still be CEO and the chief explorer? And I said, no, I need to free myself of running the business and actually have, it was part of making this transition successful is having somebody that you know you can hand the reins over to. This wouldn't have been possible if I had to go out and recruit somebody to be CEO. It only became possible because I knew there was somebody internally who I completely trusted, the investors completely trusted, and who had proven herself to be immensely capable in what she does, but also somebody that the rest of the business and the external world would feel as a credible person to step in to the CEO shoes and take the business to the next level while I then became chief explorer.
Wow. And I'm sure there's lots of founders and CEOs that your story there resonates in terms of, you got into doing the business because you want to be out there exploring, as you say, you're curious, you want to be evangelizing around the thing that you're passionate about, and they get kind of sucked into the kind of day-to-day operations of the business. But it sounds like you stuck at that for 10 years. So was there a catalyst that kind of made you realize right now is the time for me to do this? Because and when do we know when the right time is, when we're feeling those feelings?
Yeah, no, great point. And there was no particular catalyst other than me thinking I'm not enjoying this as much as I used to. But I don't want to leave the business at a point in time when this is the most exciting part of the business, is what I set out to go and do. We've got this major change event around this in the world of recruitment. I thought that, I've been doing the whole scrap the CV piece, and I thought this is my moment to really make the big difference rather than just a small difference that, the 10 years of running around doing Arctic Shores had got us to at that point. And so it really is. And your point about self-awareness around this, I think it's a really interesting one. What makes you a founder and an entrepreneur often is that you are prepared to charge through, no, you can't do this. No, you shouldn't do this. No, it won't work. To have that level of confidence often means you don't have that same level of self-awareness. Because if you did, you'd be going, oh my God, I'm getting all these negative of why you can't do this. So you wouldn't then have the drive and the energy to push through all of that. And that tension between being the pioneer and driving change when the rest of the world is saying it can't be done often requires people not to be particularly self-aware, because if they were, they wouldn't do it in the first place. So you find a lot of founders, as you alluded to, that don't know. And we see it with politicians as well. And we see it with sports stars. And the drive that enables you to get to where you are often means you're blind to your situation and where you're at and your capabilities and how you're contributing. And so there's a bit of self-awareness. There's a bit of having very good people around me as well. I think that's important, is who you listen to, that say, look, if you're not enjoying things the way that you were before, then you have to change something. And what is it that you want to change? And in my case, it wasn't, I don't want to change being in the business. I just want to change what I do in the business.
Mm. Yeah, really good point. I've personally been a revenue leader in two founder-led businesses where the founder has transitioned out of the organization. And I, you know, one of the biggest risks, I think, in that transition is the organizational disruption, or maybe the cultural shock of that change. But yeah, I think when done well, it can create space for kind of new energy to enter and thrive. And for someone like you, you know, who's staying in the business, to actually start leveraging everything that's great about, you know, what you bring to a business like this and the passion that you've got. How did you approach the transition into the role, and what helped you make it smooth for both you and, more importantly, the rest of the organization? It sounded like having a CEO that was in the business, or potential CEO that was in the business, helped. But what else did you do to help make that transition smooth for the rest of the organization?
Yes, I think there were a couple of things that jump out on that, Tom. So one is having that trust. You have to have, you know, the thing about founding a business is it's your business, your baby. It is something that you have put blood, sweat, and tears into getting it going. We've stared all sorts of disaster and challenges in the face, and you've seen through them. And so to then hand the steering wheel of the company, as it were, to somebody else. And the driving analogy is quite a good one, because we've all sat in the front seat with somebody else who's driving the car and felt they're not quite driving it in the way that I'd be driving it. And your hands are on the dashboard occasionally, and you are just naturally trying to double guess. Well, I wouldn't have driven in that way, or I would have indicated earlier, or, you know, why they shouldn't be talking to me, because, you know, they need to look out for that pothole. And so there is an element of, you know, driving in the passenger seat, or rather when you're driving in there, talking to the person that's in the passenger seat, you want to take over driving, this thing, okay, what kind of decision, you know, asking them to make the decision. So that the transition happened over a 6-month period, although between me and Estelle, although we didn't officially announce it until, you know, beginning of this year. But the 6 months leading up to it, Estelle and I already, we were talking to the board about it, but Estelle and I were already thinking about, okay, I'm going to ask you to make these decisions. I'm not going to tell you what I think. I'm going to see how you make them. And then we can talk afterwards about, you know, is that what I've done, this same thing, or how might I approach it? And I knew, because I'd worked with Estelle for already 3 years at that point, that I was comfortable and confident that she'd be making her own decisions on this, but there'd be ones that I was entirely comfortable with. And so that happened over 6 months, that observation, that background bit, where there wasn't the pressure, there wasn't the spotlight on it then. So that helped enormously. So the trust was completely there. The most difficult part was suddenly waking up on, after we announced it internally in sort of December, and then everybody very quickly, and you've seen this, a transition. Once they know, you know, there's a different person that's going to be making the key decisions, particularly around payroll and pay rises and promotions and all sorts of things, then very quickly, you're no longer the person that they're looking to for guidance, advice. Suddenly, oh, right, we've got a new person that's going to be really important to our future. It was suddenly seeing my role very, and the way people perceived me, very much change, but also then sitting in meetings and where people, you know, would make a point and then they would look at Estelle and me, and my natural instinct, because I had been doing it for 10 years, was, well, this is what I think. And actually having to go, nope, I'll just wait for Estelle, and maybe actually I won't give an opinion, which was really, really hard. I think the thing that I worried about most was, would I still be busy? Would I still be contributing? And so I set myself a clear job description. I set myself, it was very interesting to then set myself goals, have it aligned to what Estelle said that she wanted for the next stage of the business too. And I've loved it, Tom. I've actually, you know, I'm now, 5 months into the transition, best thing I've ever done.
That's great. And I love what you did there with Estelle, where you let her from the back seat kind of take over the steering wheel for a bit and to see how she drove the car with you kind of reflecting on, you know, would that be the decision you make, and probably coaching and advising and supporting her during that 6 month period as well, which is brilliant.
Every founder should be thinking at what point should they transition, even whether an exit happens or not. There's a time period where actually it's good for somebody else to come in and lead the business, and for you to step back and out in a different way and refresh your ideas and refresh what you can contribute. But you want to be able to do it with somebody that you've had time to spend with and trust you. You know, an interview process never gives you long enough to build that trust.
Right. And I'm sure many founders, you know, have considered stepping down, and it's, you know, either ego gets in the way or it kind of just feels anxiety inducing, or perhaps they haven't found the right person to step into CEO. But I also know that there's many founders that would benefit from playing a different role in the business if they could see that clear path forward. What advice do you, I suppose, have for anyone thinking about transitioning out of the CEO role? Or when should they know the time is right, I suppose, and not let their ego take over?
Yes. And I think every founder will know whether they're still enjoying things as much as they did at the outset, and what drove that energy and enthusiasm at the beginning. And there'll always be ups and downs, but you'll know in your heart of hearts whether you're still that fire, however muted it might be, is still burning in you. And if you feel that muting is in danger of extinguishing the fire, then that's very much the time to be thinking, right, I need to change what I do to reignite it. And there's different ways of doing it. You know, I was talked to one CEO the other day who brought in a COO to do that and redefine the CEO role to be a bit more like a chief explorer role, much more external facing, the intense. There are many ways you could do this, but it's very much recognizing what your strengths are and what energizes you, and setting yourself up for success in that way.
Completely agree. So I suppose coming towards the end of the episode, we always like to dig into kind of our guests' views on the startup ecosystem and maybe how it could be improved. And we often say at ScaleWise that the startup ecosystem is brilliant, but in some ways it's quite broken, especially the VC ecosystem. It's kind of full of ambition, but maybe not always geared towards kind of long-term sustainability. And I love the way you've been doing Arctic Shores now for 11 years. But if you could change one thing about the startup ecosystem, what would it be and why?
I would have loved to have the VCs now have set up sort of WhatsApp groups between CEOs, but they didn't, and I don't know why, but none of them seemed to be particularly keen, other than unless it was very carefully coordinated by them, for the CEOs to get together and have a psychologically safe discussion. And I would have loved, you know, the assumption is, oh, you're a founder and you've got a business experience, so you should know all the answers. You should know what the benchmarks are, and you should know how to manage redundancies or setting up in a new country or return to office or all these things that you have as challenges. And actually, a lot of the time you may have a thought on it, but it would be really nice to talk to somebody else and how have they done it and what did they learn from it, and the VCs have a huge opportunity to enable somehow quarterly for the CEOs or the founders to get together, because it can be very lonely. And even though you've got, I always advocate for a co-founder. I think it's your chance of success if you're a single founder really much more limited, because you need to share the burden and the thought. But even looking at other businesses and how they've done it, and how they may be slightly ahead of you on some of these things, since there's so much that you can learn. And we don't have time to go to classes or schools. There's always webinars on there, and there's podcasts, and you pick up some things. But actually to get together with a group from the same VC, but not in a way that is managed by the VC, just what are you worrying about? Have you had some senior leadership changes? Or how do you manage your chair? Or how do you manage board meetings? There's so many different things that come up that would just been lovely to have exchanged ideas. So that's one thing that I think we could leverage.
Yeah, I've heard that a few times, actually, from founders. Final question, Robert. Our whole podcast, I suppose, is rooted in this idea that too many promising startups are either kind of stalling between rounds, not able to raise the next round of funding, or maybe flaming out completely. So we'd love to ask this question of every guest. What do you think needs to happen to improve this worrying decline that we're seeing in what we call graduation rates between funding rounds, or even graduation to profitability? What do you think needs to happen to improve this worrying statistic we're seeing, where, you know, C to A and A to B is becoming even harder than it was maybe 10 years ago?
One of the things about when you raise money is that it's often, here's the check. Well, the money goes in the bank account. Right, you need to run out there and spend it as possible. We don't want it sitting in the bank, because we didn't give it to you to sit in your bank account rather than our bank account. And so you end up spending marketing money. And I mean, you know, I've been through it, and I will absolutely, you know, confess up to it. We had an office in Singapore. We had an office in Germany. We were looking and said, we just needed to do a lot more planning and careful thought about doing, you know, having three or four customers in Asia, even if they, one or two of them were reasonable size, was not enough justification to go and set up an office. Needs to do a lot more research on that. So part of it for me is that the founders, when you raise money, you should have the right and the confidence to say, I'm only going to spend the money really, really carefully. And when I know that it's the right way and I've researched it in the right way, I'll do it and spend the money carefully. I mean, one of the things too was, you know, when we raised money, it was, okay, you're ready to scale up. So you now need a senior leadership team, and you need a CRO, a CMO, a CPO. We were like 30 people. And the next thing we knew, you hire those people and they go, well, I need a head of, I need a director of. And before you know it, you're 70 people and you're going, I've spent all this money, but did we achieve what we wanted to achieve? No, because we were told this is the things that you should do, as opposed to being allowed to be in a more measured way. Now, knowing that you've got the money in the bank allows you then to start planning and thinking in an ambitious way, but it doesn't mean that you should just run out there and spend it without a lot of very, very careful thought and test and learn, as opposed to just spend.
Such a great point to end on, Robert, and fully agree. Really resonated with me. Too many companies think scaling is really about scaling headcount, and it really isn't. To your point, once you've got the money, it's about how do you scale wisely, and that often involves experimentation and testing and deploying bits of capital in places where you can really find what those growth levers are, rather than just, you know, throwing money at headcount, which is too often done. Robert, thank you so much for coming on Making the Grade. What you shared today, I'm sure, will resonate with so many founders who are maybe wrestling with not just how to scale their companies, but how to scale them themselves. I think your decision to step aside from the CEO role not out of bad health or failure, but to create space for what you're best at, is genuinely inspiring. It shows that success isn't about holding the top job, but about playing the role where you can really make the biggest impact. I think that's a powerful message, that kind of aligning your work with your passions and strengths can be just as, if not more, important than staying at the helm. So thank you again for your honesty, your wisdom, and for showing the rest of us, I think, what it looks like to evolve with purpose. So really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much for coming on.
Not at all. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Thank you so much for listening to Making the Grade. We really hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you have any questions following this episode, or you'd like to recommend a guest perhaps for our next season, please let us know at podcast@scalewise.com. And if you did enjoy today's episode, please do consider leaving us a review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We'd really appreciate that. As this is a brand new show, reviews really help us spread the word and reach new listeners. Plus, we'd also love to hear what you're enjoying about our show. Thank you so much for your support, and see you soon for another episode of Making the Grade.